Hello, you are listening to Prof Talk on UBC CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Welcome to Prof Talk. I'm your host, Farha Khan. My guest today is Dr. Kimberly Schonert-Reichel, who is an applied developmental psychologist and associate professor in the Faculty of Education at UBC. For over 20 years, the research conducted by Dr. Schonert-Reichel has focused on the social and emotional learning in children and adolescents, with a particular emphasis on identifying the processes and mechanisms that foster children's positive human traits, such as optimism, empathy, compassion, and altruism. Currently, she's investigating the effectiveness of universal social and emotional learning programs, including the Roots of Empathy program and the Mind Up program, which integrate social and emotional learning and mindfulness-based education. She's also engaged in conducting interdisciplinary research in collaboration with neuroscientists and psychobiologists, examining the relation of executive functions and biological processes to children's social and emotional learning and development. Kim joins me now live in studio here in CITR. Thank you, Kim, for coming in today.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm well, and how are you?
I'm good. Doing good. Looking forward to having this talk with you and hearing what kinds of questions you have.
Yeah, well, I'd like to start asking about you. Can you describe a little bit about your background and journey to your current position as professor here at UBC? You know, for example, you've got, you know, prior to graduate studies, you were an elementary and high school teacher for at-risk adolescents. So tell us about that journey.
Yeah. So, well, it's interesting because I really never thought about becoming a professor until I actually kind of graduated with my undergraduate degree. I did my undergraduate degree in Illinois at Illinois State University in teacher education. So I thought I was going to be an elementary school teacher, and really liked that idea of working with children. And really, actually, it was a class that I took in developmental psychology where I had a prof who really inspired me. And I thought, well, that seems like kind of an interesting idea, that maybe thinking of going into graduate school and that people actually can do that kind of work. But I decided to first go into teaching and see, you know, to get some practical experience. It was really important to what I've been told by people is not to go directly into graduate school, to actually get some experience. So I first taught 7th and 8th grade French, was one of my first teaching experiences. And then I went on and I was very interested in, as you might have guessed, so choosing 7th and 8th graders as your first teaching experience, I liked a challenge, you know. I really liked to that kind of questioning and the humor and that. And then I decided, for several reasons, I was very interested in working with more troubled youth, kids who are having problems, who didn't like school as much. And so I began working at a school. It was an alternative high school. So it was a place where kids get kicked out of school for various reasons. This was the early 80s, and it was various, I always say they had tattoos before they became fashionable, often self-designed. They were students who at first, you might think they're kind of scary looking, or they're kind of burly and non-compliant. And what I was, but I wanted to see what were the things that you could connect them to school. So interesting, I always tell a story about how when I first started teaching there, I was young. I was like 22, 23. And they were really mean to me at first because they, for various reasons, I think they were mean to me because I had replaced their previous teacher and they had liked her and I wasn't Kathy, as I said. Also, I think they pushed me away a lot was because I was a teacher and these were kids who had failed repeatedly in school. So it wasn't me that they disliked. It was this whole idea of the teacher who, again, is another person who's going to show them what a failure they are in their life and stuff. And so I realized I became very interested in this idea of not just they pushed me away and instead of, I mean, I will say my feelings were hurt because you want to be liked as a teacher. But I then began to think about, well, you know, really, that's very resilient of them to not make themselves vulnerable, to be hurt one more time, to push away and maybe to have me show that they can trust me. And so one of the stories I have is one of the things that I became really interested in is how to actually get them more engaged in school. And what I found was when I started asking their opinions about things, they became really helpful. So the school that I worked at was this alternative school. It was like in an office complex. It was really kind of weird. It had computers and no books. Like, this is so weird. It had no books, just these, not even computers. It was so retro anyway. So, and nothing on the walls. Like, it was really a sterile environment. So I started thinking like, well, how about if I get them to help start decorating? So I'd start bringing in these catalogs. What do you guys think should be over there? What do you think should be over there? And also the books. And one of the moms came to me and she worked at a library and she said, oh, Kim, we always get all these books donated. And so she said, you should come and get some. So a group of the kids and I invited the ones who I knew would come with me. Let's pick out some books for the school. And soon, I was the reading teacher, by the way. That would provide a good context for this. soon, this whole area that was kind of bare and stark and became their place. And finally, there was this one boy, Tim. I remember him quite clearly. He had come up to me, kind of a kid, very burly, a few words, very tall, like 2 feet taller than I. And I'm not that tall. And he said, you know, my dad owns a grocery store and we have these racks that you could put the books on and they turn kind of thing. Goes, I think that would look really nice in here. And I'm like, that would be fantastic, Tim. The next day, Tim, on the short bus, you know, that the kids with special needs take, here's Tim off this bus carrying this you know, spiral thing to put the books into the school. So it was those. So it actually sort of leads into how I became so interested. What are the ways in which you can, in school, through relationships, create students who you might not think ever would care about school, ever do something altruistically like that, bring in some, you know, and it was really those kids. I have to say, everything I've studied for the past 20 years, my research has all been inspired, generated from my work with kids, especially the troubled kids, because those are the ones who you become so curious about what you can do to make a difference.
It's a beautiful story. Can you tell us about your research in contemplative education? What is contemplative education?
Oh, okay.
And there's all these words that we'll talk about, which I hope you will define. But let's get into that discussion of what you really are looking at.
Today. So this is a really interesting story. I don't know, do your listeners like really interesting stories?
Okay.
So how did I get into, you talk about contemplative education or mindfulness. So I'm going to just talk about my research on mindfulness. And it really all starts. So I'd never known anything about mindfulness I never heard of it until about, I guess it would have been 6-7 years ago, until I got connected to Goldie Hawn. So what happened is in 2004, there was a visit with the Dalai Lama, came to UBC and with Desmond Tutu and Shireen Abadi and I think Rabbi Zalman Schachter and also Joanne Archibald were on stage at the Chan Center talking about balancing educating the mind with educating the heart. And I became interested. I got invited actually to be involved getting some high school students to go on stage and ask some questions. And so because of my research on empathy at that time, I'd been doing research on a program called The Roots of Empathy. My own career had spanned looking at the relationship between empathy and moral reasoning and moral development. So that's how I got connected. But it was at that point that a colleague of mine who was at Penn State actually connected me to Goldie Hawn. And at that time, Goldie and Kurt, people might remember this or have heard of it. Goldie, and actually your listeners might not even know who Goldie Hawn is. Goldie Hawn is the mother of Kate Hudson. and Kurt Russell, who was escaped from New York. Some people might like that kind of stuff. Anyways, they moved here because their son, Wyatt, was into hockey. And he was in high school at the time. And so they moved here for several years because of his interest in hockey. But it also was a time where Goldie was approaching 60. She had been in New York during September 11th. Her own work, ask your parents about Goldie Hawn, people who are listening who've maybe heard of her. She was really a comedic actress, very talented in terms of, but she was known for comedy, and laughing was one thing in the 60s she was really well known for. And she became interested in the idea. She became so devastated about the stress upon children after September 11th and really worried. And she started thinking about what are some ways we could bring more joy and happiness to children. What can we do that through schools? And so for her, she had been practicing mindfulness for a number of years. She actually talked about in her early 20s when she became very famous that she had a bit of a breakdown and had to go into psychoanalysis to sort of find herself again. And that doing mindfulness meditation was one thing that really helped her cope with the stress. And so she really then, so then my friend Mark, who knew of Goldie and connected with her when the Dalai Lama was here, then connected Goldie to me because Goldie right away said, okay, I want to develop a program for kids in school. I want it to bring something about mindfulness that's going to bring more joy and happiness. But, and she said it needs to have rigorous science behind it. So not just that, and also needs to have research on it and its effectiveness right from the start. She realized both as an actress, you know, some people might say it's kind of, oh yeah, that's Goldie Hawn, a program who, you know, I mean, to be much more skeptical and critical of it. And so she really wanted to have that. And because of my connection to schools, so it's really Goldie who introduced me to the whole concept of mindfulness. And mindfulness, I haven't even answered your question. Mindfulness really refers to the definition by Jon Kabat-Zinn is being present and aware, you know, aware in the moment, non-judgmentally. So really being within the moment. Some people talk about mindfulness meditation, but really mindfulness is something you could practice in any, you know, you could do mindful eating, mindful listening, walking while you're doing the dishes. There's so many different ways that you could be really in the moment. And there's now research, not just my own, but research in neuroscience showing that it actually increases gray matter. And it's just phenomenal. The whole area of mindfulness and research has just taken off. So I won't go it, but for people who are interested, just Google mindfulness research and you'll find lots of stuff.
So tell us about mindfulness in children and with children and what kind of programs you're working or you're looking at that are happening in schools. You know, can you give us an example of what it actually looks like in the classroom?
Right. And so there's a program that the Hawn Foundation developed, and people want to go to the website. They can just go to the Hawn Foundation and read about a program called Mind Up. It used to be called Mindfulness Education, and now it's called Mind Up. And it's a program that is for children in kindergarten through eighth grade, and you could actually go on Scholastic, the website, or Amazon and buy it for $24.99, the program for the different age groups. And interestingly, there's a couple of things. So I'll tell you about the program, then I'll give you a sample of a lesson. So the program really the program really teaches kids about their brain first and foremost, because if you think about mindfulness, there's a certain, I don't know if your listeners are thinking of this, but you know, some people might say, well, it just sounds kind of, I don't know, new agey, or I don't know, or kind of, you know, is it secular? Is it sort of roots in Buddhism and things like that? So those are all criticisms. It is a secular, the idea of mindfulness is something, it is secular. It's considered this idea of mindfulness. Mindfulness meditation is one aspect of it, but it's not all of it. And so, but what is really critical is all the research on the brain. So in the Mind Up program, from kindergarten to eighth grade, children first have a lesson about their brain, about what the amygdala is, about the prefrontal cortex, about the hippocampus. They actually have a, they do identify the brain parts and talk about what they do. So they might even do like, I think there's a program, a game where they might play the brain game, where they actually give an example and say, would you be using your prefrontal cortex or your amygdala for that situation? And really start thinking about their brain. And then in the next lessons, they learn about mindfulness and find out when you do, what happens to your brain when you do this kind of quiet listening. So for the Mind Up program, one thing that they do throughout the program is they have a chime, and it could be an, it could be a sound, a resonating sound, something. And what you find is what children would be doing, I would tell you, so you sit, find a, you learn about mindfulness and what it does to your brain and all about the brain, and then they practice it. And so what kids do, what you tell children is you'd get into a comfortable position, sit with your feet, you know, flat on the ground, feel real comfortable, and you could close your eyes or you could just look kind of gaze downward. And then what the teacher would do is say, now I'm going to hit the chime. And so we'll hit a chime that has a, I wish I should have brought my chime. I could have done it right here. And you sound the chime and then you listen to it. So what you have to do is listen to the sound of the chime until it ends. And after it ends, take sort of three deep breaths where you're just focusing on your breath. And even though we all have these thoughts that come into our mind about things, especially of us adults, you know, oh, I should be doing this now and I didn't do that today. Oh, darn, you know, and stuff. And what you do is you realize that's a thought and then you let it pass non-judgmentally. So it's really a training. And like any, you know, it's the idea of being in the present moment and not get caught up in that rumination that often happens. And it appears from the research so far, very positive findings, and doing this on a consistent basis. This isn't like you do it once and you got it down. In the program, the Mind Up program, they actually do it three times a day across the school year. Where they do, you know, think about it. Think you come in the morning, you're kind of frazzled, you're running to school, and all of a sudden the teacher's like, okay, now we're going to do mindfulness. Everybody just get comfortable. Mm-hmm. We'll turn down the lights and have a moment to breathe and be present, and then let's start the day. Mm-hmm. Come back from recess, all kind of ready, you know, all things, okay, let's just take a moment and breathe, mm-hmm. and then let's go on to math. Or, you know, and then at the end of the day to go off. And so that's just part of it, that mindfulness. And then there's lessons that focus on all mindfulness of the senses. So they do mindful listening and then apply it to all the subjects. Like, you know, you could apply mindful listening to your music class then. And one teacher told me how she got the kids who all of a sudden have been practicing and going, oh, I could hear the oboe. I can hear the violin, you know, all sorts of different mindfulness, a mindfulness walk outside to say, what are the sounds that you hear? You know, you can imagine it could just be incorporated into so many things. They do mindful movement where they might dance and just be really aware of their movements and how they're feeling. They do mindful tasting, which I have to say is one of my favorite, where you learn to eat mindfully. Like, how many times do we just shovel our food in our, you know, hurry up and eat? And here they learn, how do you really enjoy your food, smell it? So my favorite one is the Hershey Kiss one, where you take a Hershey Kiss and you just, you could take 5 minutes to eat a Hershey Kiss just to enjoy and savor and smell. And and then they move on. So after the mindful, I won't go through all of it, they move on to mindfulness in relation to others. So they do perspective taking in the sense of how you start thinking about another person's perspective. They learn about learning optimism, how you start looking at things through the glass half full, and the idea that you can actually change your mind and begin to think about looking at the positive side of things. And we know there's a whole bunch of benefits of that. And also they do gratitude, where they start thinking about what they're thankful for. And so it takes the mindfulness and the idea, once you're present with yourself and really less stressed, you can start moving it outward. And then they move it to doing random acts of kindness, where they start, you know, the young kindergarten, you know, I'm thinking of your son?
Yes.
Yeah. In kindergarten, who might, in a class, have to make a list, you know, the teacher help the children make a list of things you're going to, kind acts you're going to do for other people this week. And then when you do them, you just check them off. You're like, oh, I'm going to share with my friend. And then the last 2 weeks of thinking about mindful acts in the community, where they come together and think about what can we do to make a difference, either in our school community, in our local community, in the world community, to make a difference and come together to think about what they can do to make a difference.
Well, this sounds absolutely wonderful, and especially as a parent, you know, with a child that's now in school. How much of the, you know, this program is in, say, in Vancouver, in the schools, and how much is really, how is this message getting out that this exists and this can be part of school curriculum?
So you ask a couple of really great questions. So I first have to say that one of the things is in Vancouver, it started in 2005 as a pilot of 17 teachers, and it was basically to do the first research study, because it was just developed, and it's actually been through several revisions, because to make it fit within the class, it had to be something that the teacher saw as valuable and easily integrated. So we've revised it. It isn't me so much. I've been the researcher, but the Hahn Foundation has revised it based on teacher feedback. So right now in Vancouver, over 1,000 teachers have been trained in the program.
That's fantastic.
And that's without ever really advertising it or anything. There's wait lists continuously for getting trained in the program. It's become, I think there's several reasons. It's so interesting to me just to see it become this kind of interest, because I think teachers realize that this is so important to address. I think they see that this Mind Up program, my sense is that they hear about it from their colleagues who say, this is great. It's really easy to do. It's inexpensive. You know, the manual is so good. You can get training for free, a one-day training at Vancouver School Board when there's professional development days, although that fills up like immediately. There's wait lists forever. They find that they see a difference in children right away. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that this, you know, it's so interesting because I feel in some ways kids are more close to the present, you know, and they kind of relish this idea like we're going to come in and just be still and be, you know, because there is something. I mean, to take a walk with a two-year-old, mm-hmm. how long does it take? Because yeah. they're just so in the moment, right?
Yeah.
And then I think the teachers, I mean, I'd love to talk to some teachers about it. We have in part of our research, but it helps them. Mm-hmm. So by helping teach the kids practice this, it's something they do and they see it spills over into their own life and improving their own well-being. So there's lots of, and of course we have the research that's very positive findings so far. I think that helps. And anyway, so throughout Canada, the program is really growing, and in the U.S. as well, and even in other countries.
And can listeners get in touch with you or your lab or you know, your department if they're interested in learning more about
this?
If
they're interested, certainly. If they're interested in, there's a couple of places. One is if they're interested in direct contact and say, I want to get trained in this program. If it's a parent who says, I want to get my son in a classroom, that's my son's or daughter's teacher doing this, they I can connect them to the person. The person who is the one who oversees training in Western Canada is Lisa Pedrini, who is at the Vancouver School Board. She's the manager for social responsibility, but I would be happy to make that connection to Lisa. If you go on the Hahn website, and you will see that Lisa's contact information is right on the website. And I will say the other kind of really neat UBC connection, besides having a research lab, and we're doing a really amazing study right now looking at if a program for teachers called Smart in Education, stress management and relaxation training, actually has a spillover effect on the kids, or you need the combo of the SMART plus the Mind Up, is being done. But I do want to say that one of my doctoral students, who was a master's student of mine, who is now doing her PhD, she's the one who wrote the curriculum for the Mind Up program.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, it's been such a pleasure. Time flies when you're hearing such wonderful stories. Thank you so much, Kim. It's been wonderful. And I hope I can have you back on the show and we can talk, we can follow up with this program and also hear that video that you sent me. Maybe you
yes.
can quickly plug that because people can watch
there's,
it on YouTube.
Right. There's a great video that kind of captures a story called The Breakfast Club of a group of grade 8 students in Pitt River Middle School in Coquitlam who took the idea of hearing about research from their teacher that if you help others, you become happier. And they decided to test it and to see if they could actually did an experiment. Like, okay, if we start helping, will we become happier? And it just grew beyond, it went out of control, really, in terms of what they did and how they made such a difference in their school and in their community.
That's great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I've just been speaking with Dr. Kimberly Schornert-Reichel, who is an associate professor in the Faculty of Education. For more information about her research, please visit educ.ubc.ca/research/KSR. You are listening to Prof Talk on UBC CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver and via live web streaming on CITR.ca. Prof Talk airs every Tuesday at 3 p.m. and features interviews with professors from a variety of disciplines. Next week, I will speak with Dr. Rashid Sumaila, who is the director of the UBC's Fishery Center. If you would like to hear a podcast of this show or any previous episode of Prof Talk, please visit proftalk.ubc.ca or email us at prof.talk@ubc.ca. I'm going to end the show today with the song by Nickelback, If Everyone Cared.
Underneath the trees, we watch the sky, confusing stars.